And the first time I tried a Percocet pill, bro, it was a wrap. Like, that was like my new love. Like, I just immediately fell in love. I ended up in drug rehab 4 times, ended up getting arrested. I got fired from my job at Buffalo Wild Wings. I sold them all on eBay instantly. I forgot about the ad on Craigslist. Well, K Jewelers ended up digging into me and they found my ad on Craigslist. So they, all the gift cards I had bought in like the last month, they zeroed out every single one of them.
Oh.
And so messages just poured in on eBay. You scam artist, you sold me a gift card. Like, I think they zeroed them out to like 1 penny each.
Welcome back to another episode of The Boss Podcast. Who is the boss today? Man, we have a special guest today. He sold over 1.6 million in sales on Amazon. He's overcome drugs, addiction, depression. He is him. This is him, okay? He's always smiling. He's always positive. And man, this guy is willing to give the shirt off his back to you and willing to help you out. I just want to introduce to you today, who's the boss? We've got Mr. Jameson Phillippe in the building.
Yes, sir. Bro, that was probably the sickest intro I've ever seen in my life, dude. I'm doing good, brother. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I am doing well. Where are you at today?
I just got back to Vegas yesterday. I'm home in Las Vegas right now.
In Vegas, good Lord. Well, man, listen. Glad you're here. Happy to have you on. You're definitely a beast and a monster, and look forward to talking to you here. So you said you live in Vegas.
Yes, sir.
Oh man, how long you lived out there for?
I've been here about 2.5 years now.
You like it?
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, I miss the East Coast. Like, I mean, I like, you know, New York and all that stuff. And so I miss the food out there. But Vegas is cool. It's nice year round. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, they have ASD here twice a year, which
busy.
Is, I love attending
busy
that one.
Out
so
there.
There's a lot to do.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if I could ever live out in Vegas, man, because I feel like I would get pulled to like every different direction. There's so much to do out there.
Yes, you definitely have to like have a good balance of life because there's so many distractions, so many things that could turn you into degenerate out here. Like it's easy to get sidetracked, definitely.
Oh my God. Well, listen, why don't you tell everybody, you know, your background story and how you got into selling Amazon? I just want to hop right into it because I know I saw your numbers last year. You sold I think it was $1.61 million on Amazon.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I did 1.6 last year. It's crazy. It's still crazy that I hit that. Like, it's still unbelievable to me, you know. From where I came from to now, it's still like sometimes you have to like pinch yourself. And it's like, is this real life? Like, how did I get out of this hole? You know, so it's still, I'm still always blessed and extremely grateful for, you know, everything that I'm doing and growing and stuff. Like, I never forget where I came from ever. Like, I remind myself every day, you know, to always be, remember where you came from, remember why you're doing this, remember what you're working for. Like, yeah, it's still crazy to me too.
Is this your first year selling over $1 million or have you done over $1 million previously?
I think this is my third year doing over $1 million.
Third year. Holy shit. Third year. Good Lord. Third year doing over
every
million,
year we
man.
Grow
That's
a little
amazing.
Bit, you know, 10% or something. So, but yeah, just so this year I'm shooting for 2. I'm going to do a big jump this year, but we'll see. I don't really put hard goals on hitting that sales. Like, I don't really care in a sense, but I like to see the growth. And all I want to do is make sure that I'm making less mistakes every year. That's my main goal. It's like, okay, am I making less mistakes? Am I making smarter decisions? You know, because I would have no problem selling 1.5 this year if I made way less mistakes. I would take that any day, you know. So that's what my main goal is. And now the added bonus, it's fun. It feels good, you know, if you can do a little bit better in sales every year. So, like, that's not my main goal. But it's you know, that's like a fun little, you know, achievement I have for myself. But it's not like set, like, I got to hit 2 million. I got to do this. Because that's like, it doesn't really matter. As long if you're not making money, what does it matter, you know? So
do you set goals or you just kind of do – kind of like the best you can? Like, is there like a level that which you say, you know, okay, I did 1.61 this year, I want to try to do maybe 1.75? Or are you just like, you know what, I'm just going to search for the items, we're going to get the items, and then we're just going to sell what we can?
So I'm really weird when it comes to goals. And this is probably, nobody will agree with me on this, but like, I'm horrible at setting goals. I've set so many goals in my life and like after a month, I forgot about them. And so like, I guess in the sense of a goal, like I look at today, like what can I do to be successful today? You know, personal, health, business, my relationship, my friendships. Like I try to give to today because I know if I can be successful today, I'll be successful tomorrow. And I look at it on a day-to-day thing where if I'm working hard on my business today, I'm doing all the things I need to do, I'll get to where I want to be. So it's like I think about it on a small scale, but then it always works out long scale. If I just, okay, was I successful today? What did I do good to help grow my business? Did I make smart decisions? Was I good to my body? Was I good to my friends? Was I good to my, you know, to my fiance? All that stuff. I know at the end of the day, you know, I'm a good. So like I try to be successful in all the areas of my life because I feel like if you're lacking in one area, it's going to pour over into other areas. You know, so it's like if you have a crappy home life, crappy relationship, crappy, you know, relationship with your kids or your wife, your girlfriend or boyfriend, like that's going to reflect on your business in some way, shape or form. Because if you're arguing at home, you're not going to be able to put your full love and interest into your business. So it's like you got to have that everything be in line so that way everything can be. I feel everything. It's like you work at a little bit of everything in your life. Everything is going to work out. You know, if you're slacking somewhere, then everything's going to fall apart slowly but surely. So that's kind of how I look at like goals and like success and stuff. A few months ago, my now fiance, she quit her job and she's
congratulations on that, by the way.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. So yeah, so she's full time with me right now. She's actually downstairs, prepping and, boxing stuff up. Yes. So I think, you know, like not like a hard go. I think since we're together now and she's full time and I'm bringing her on and I'm teaching her everything, you know, and we're starting to go to stores and scan and ship together that I think, you know, we could probably do 2 million this year, but it's like not a set in stone. Like we got to do it. You know, like I'm having fun and I'm enjoying, you know, selling on Amazon and I enjoy traveling. So like my goals are met every day in that sense. So that's kind of
I'll say I used to sell on Amazon because I still kind of sell on Amazon, which is how I think me and you have connected in the past. We've sourced together in the past. I remember being in Target and you were picking up some Hello Kitty Amiibo gift cards.
Yeah, that like that's right.
Those cards. And you said, hey, have you seen these? And I was like, no. And you like took the whole thing off the rack. I think there was like 30 or 40 something. You threw them in the carriage. And I was like, what? And I was like, what the hell are those? You're like, bro, you don't like money, bro? And I was like, yo, I didn't even know they existed. What are these things? But I remember that, man. That was when in Florida when you were here.
That's and, right. You know how a much lot of people watching.
I can imagine. $6 was it $6 profit each one?
No, I lost. Amazon lost them all and wouldn't reimburse me.
Shut up. Are you kidding me?
I sent them my receipts, everything.
Are you kidding me? They lost them? That's oh shit.
Well,
that's
they never showed up in the shipment, thing. I guess. So.
Oh my God. Holy crap. And listen, for everybody watching out there, everybody, you know, this podcast is surrounds business owners, self-made people, entrepreneurs and stuff. We're talking 1.6 million going up for 2 million Amazon, right? Buying like Amiibo cards and Hello Kitty. Let's peel it back a little bit. Why don't you tell everybody exactly what you do and what made you decide to actually do it?
Definitely. So I full-time Amazon seller. I do a lot of retail arbitrage, a mixture of some online arbitrage, not a lot. It's not my strong suit. I do a lot of wholesale. I got into Amazon, eBay eBay like 15 years ago. I had a buddy who was full-time eBay. He used to flip video games from Craigslist to eBay, and he used to flip. He would buy lots of video games on eBay and then reflip them on eBay one at a time. And he taught me how to do that. And I thought it was cool. So I was like, I tried it too. And I had signed up for my eBay account. And like when you first signed up for your eBay account back in the day, they gave me like a 20 or 25% off coupon. And then I found somebody selling like a lot of like 100 Nintendo games. They wanted like, I don't know, $700. But I threw him an offer of like 500. And then they accepted. And then I got to use my coupon on that on top of that. So I got like 100 Nintendo games for like, I don't know, $300 or $400 shipped. And then I turned around and flipped them one at a time on eBay. And I was just hooked. I was like, this is so cool. Like this was back before like reselling was a thing. And I was hooked. At the time I was a waiter at Buffalo Wild Wings. And then I used to play online poker. So I had like three little side hustles at that time. And, you know, I was doing that. I had fun. I was growing eBay. I loved doing that back in the day. That was a simpler time. Fast forward a little bit. I got involved. I got a buddy introduced me to a game called World of Warcraft, and we would go play it after work, you know, on the weekends. And then he also introduced me to something else, a painkiller called Percocet. And the first time I tried a Percocet pill, bro, it was a wrap. Like, that was like my new love. Like, I just immediately fell in love. best feeling I've ever had in the world. Just this amazing numb. Just I loved it. And that, you know, that one pill ruined my, you know, ruined my life. I ended up getting fully on addicted to it. I ended up in drug rehab 4 times, ended up getting arrested. I got fired from my job at Buffalo Wild Wings. I lost my eBay account because I was flipping. So when I was starting to run out of money and when my drug problem became more than I could afford, like, cause it was getting to the point where I'm spending $200-$400 a day.
Right. On pills. Right.
I'm not making that much money. So I have to figure out, okay, how can I do that? And I had the K Jewelers credit card. And I was like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go buy a bunch of gift cards at K Jewelers and then flip them on eBay at a discount and then just pay the minimum, you know, $10, $20 a month, you know, on the credit card. Not, you know, I had no intentions of doing anything, you know, in a sense of wrong. I was just going to make the minimum payments on the credit card for the rest of my life. And I went and bought like, I don't know, like $1,000 in gift cards, like a bunch of gift cards. Boom, they all sold. And I sold them at maybe like 10 or 15% off face value. And I ended up getting, you know, some money and I went out and got high, had fun. It was great. And then I went back. I was like, let me do it again. And then I went back again and they gave me some resistance this time. They're like, why do you need all these gift cards? Blah, 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 blah. Went home, sold them on eBay. And then like,
because you were doing nothing but purchasing gift cards.
Yeah. I was buying gift cards with my credit card from there, which I guess was not allowed to do that. And so I put an ad on Craigslist too to try to sell the gift cards, but I forgot about the ad. No one ever hit me up. No one ever mentioned anything. I sold them all on eBay instantly. I forgot about the ad on Craigslist. Well, K Jewelers ended up digging into me and they found my ad on Craigslist. So they, all the gift cards I bought from like the last month, they zeroed out every single one of them.
Oh.
And so messages just poured in on eBay. You scam artist, you sold me a gift card. Like, I think they zeroed them out to like one penny each. Right. And so everybody got gift cards basically that were worthless. And I'm getting all these messages. Where's my money? I need a refund. At this point, I'd spent all the money on drugs.
Right.
And
right.
So I was so
ashamed. That money's gone.
I messaged a couple people back on eBay. I'm really sorry. I lied. I'd spent the money on rent. I'm really sorry. You know, open a case with eBay. I'm sure you'll get your money back. I truly, you know, I'm sorry. I felt horrible. And after a couple messages, I couldn't even message people back. I just was so ashamed. And it's like, then the drug like issue hits you. It's like, damn, dude, I really messed up my life this bad. So I logged out of eBay and I never logged back into that account. I'm pretty sure I got banned and on eBay for that account. And ended up going to rehab again, you know, got fired from Buffalo Wild Wings. And, you know, I got, you know, desperate. I broke into someone's house, someone I know's house and like stole some jewelry from them and went and pawned it. And I was stealing from, you know, mom, loved ones, friends, and like pawning their jewelry and, you know, stuff. And, you know, racking up tabs with drug dealers where they would front me drugs. And that, you know, like I would like, you know, and then I would like have issues with dealers and stuff. And like, I was so effed up. Like I was like, I had this dude I used to buy drugs from he was in a gang. And like, I didn't even think like I was doing anything wrong. Like, you know, and then he kept like calling me cause I wasn't paying him and I didn't know who I was dealing with. Like cause he was so nice to me. And then like, you know, and then he was coming after me and like, it was just really bad. I ended up paying him back and everything. But like, and I ended up losing everything, kicked out of my mom's house, you know, kicked out of everybody's house, and ended up going to rehab for the 4th time, finally got sober. And then, you know, for like 3 years, I played World of Warcraft in my basement, literally absolute epitome loser scum, like just degenerate, just poor existence for a human. You know, I'm probably 30 something years old at this point. Have nothing to show for life. I just felt like a loser. And then it's like, I'm playing World of Warcraft every morning to every night. It just, you're so numb. You feel you have no self-worth. And eventually I'm like, okay, I need to find a job. I go out, I start looking for jobs. I'm applying everywhere and nobody freaking, I'm getting interviews left and right, blah, 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 blah. Nobody's hiring me. I'm not getting a job anywhere. I'm getting, you know, no callbacks, you know, interview, no callback, interview, no callback. Then I'm starting to, you know, like once I can't get a job as like a manager at like Lids or a PacSun or somewhere in the mall or whatever, because that's all I knew how to do is retail and stuff like that. I started applying at like Target, you know, to stock shelves, got it. 2 interviews on the spot, never called me back. Applied at Walmart, got 2 interviews. They never called me back. Walmart was like to push carts or something like that.
Whoa, like, whoa. Walmart didn't hire you even? Yep. And I listen, we've seen some of the people in Walmart. We've seen some of the help that they hire, man. That just goes to show that you were at a dangerous spot right there.
And that was a dangerous spot. The worst one, because like, how are you, like, you know, not to talk down in that sense, but like, how are you going to turn someone down at a job at Walmart? They hire anybody.
Anybody, right.
I mean, you got two legs and two hands. You're getting a job at Walmart if you want one. And so like that was sends you in another depression. And I ended up packing up everything I own. I moved to Nashville because I just wanted to get out of my toxic life that I was in. Moved to Nashville. I was sleeping on my friend's floor on a yoga mat. You know, like I didn't even have a bed. I was sleeping on the floor on a little yoga mat. And I started applying jobs out there. Same thing. And I started to get back into eBay again. So I was just going to Goodwills and stuff. You know, just like I was making a couple.
They didn't ban your account?
I had to open up a new account. I just opened up a new account, my same name, everything, and everything worked. You know, I didn't have any issues. And so I was making a couple $100 a month on eBay profit, you know, and that's how I was living. You know, I was driving around. I didn't have any car insurance. Like I couldn't afford it. So I was driving around. I drove around for a few years without car insurance. You know, I was still trying to apply jobs everywhere. Nobody was hiring. And the very last place I applied for a job was at the Fossil store in the Opry Mills Mall, Nashville, Tennessee. They gave me an interview on the spot. Went great. They called me back for a second interview. Never got the job. Call them. Hey, what's up? Oh yeah, we'll get back to you in a couple days. And after that, I'm just like, I'm clearly a piece of shit. I'm a loser. I'm not going to get a job anywhere. So I just stuck with eBay, you know, and then I think a few months later I found Amazon and I tried that. And then I'm still, you know, I'm grinding eBay and Amazon at the same time. And after like a few months of doing that, like I started to see potential. I'm like, oh man, like I think I made like, you know, after grinding both, I think I made like 1 month, I made like 1,000 profit. I'm like, dude, like, this is crazy. Like I just push a little more, like I don't need a job. Like, and so I just pushed and I pushed and all that bad crap. Well, let me rhyme. All the bad stuff that happened was my fault. I made those decisions for the bad stuff to happen in my life. So like that. So, but those things will help fuel me to work hard. Like as much effort as I put into being a drug addict, I like put all that effort into reselling. Like, cause it's like, you know, I'm sure you've seen this meme, like a crackhead can find $500 to get crack every day. How can you not find money to grow your business or do what you want to do? Like, so it's like, I put all that effort into Amazon and eBay. And I grinded for years and years. And I had so many hangups because I had all my past life and all my past relationships still clinging to me where they would pull me down. And like, I was starting to grind Amazon for like a year at this point. And my payouts, not my profit, like my payouts would be $2,000-$3,000 every 2 weeks, which was a crap ton of money to me. I mean, $2,000, that's still a lot of money to me now. And I'm getting like $2,000-$3,000 every 2 weeks for my payouts, not all profit. At this time, I was sharing a bank account with my mom because I still had creditors after me because I was maxing out credit cards, writing bad checks, and just being a degenerate, you know, back in the day. My mom, unfortunately, had an issue with gambling and pills and stuff like that. So she would go to the casino, and this is back when you could go, you could have like a dollar in your bank account, go to the casino and withdraw like $500. And they would let you because it wasn't like a couple days.
I remember those banks, man. I remember when ATMs were first the thing and when they first introduced debit cards, because I'm a fossil, that you used to have to like put cash in an envelope and you would deposit that envelope into the ATM machine and they would give you X amount of money up front until they verified the deposit. Yep. Well, back in the day when we were kids, you would deposit empty envelopes and you would get that $100 up front or that $200 depending on what bank you were at. Yep. And you could withdraw it right away. And it was just, you know, as kids and as I feel like the newer generation now can't get away with that because everything is so digitalized and everything is so, you know, under a microscope digitally. That's like, how do you even think to get away with that? You know, what was the first item that you sold on Amazon? That can you remember what was the first thing that you said you had made, you know, $1,000 in a week and you were like, whoa, wait a second, this is friggin' awesome. Like, what was that first item that you came across that you were like, hey, you know what? I'm going to send this in and see if I can make money off it. And how did you know you were going to make money off it?
Honestly, Amazon is such a foreign language back then, because back then there was no help from no one. There was no YouTube, no courses, nothing. Like, I had no clue what I was doing, and I had no clue how to learn it. Like, how to even do a shipment, like, it was like literally like someone's like, here, learn Chinese in 20 minutes. You know, it's right. Like, and I
how do you do it? Right.
So I once I started getting all this so right before I started Amazon, I one day thought like, oh man, I wonder if there's anybody else in the world that resells. So I started Facebooking reseller, Amazon, not Amazon, but eBay reseller, all that. And that's kind of how I ended up finding about eBay, Amazon. But I didn't know there was a community of people, the other people that were doing this. Like I thought it was just me and my buddy that were reselling. I didn't know anyone else did that ever. And so then I slowly got into the reseller community, on YouTube and stuff. And I found Raikin and ended up joining the Green Room. But I joined a bunch of free Facebook groups for eBay and Amazon. And I started Amazon and I would go in the free groups. And I was probably that annoying guy. Like if you see the newer sellers go in the groups that are like, oh, that guy's annoying. That was probably me. Because I remember I would ask questions and I would get just badgered by people sometimes. And people were just like so mean. Not a lot, not everybody, but some people were mean. I remember that just bully, just jerk offs to you. And I got to the point where I'm like, please help me. I don't know how to do my first shipment. I'll pay you money. Can we do Zoom or whatever the heck they had going on back then? I'll pay you money. Like, coach me. And I would just get like bombarded with like a couple jerks, but that stuck to me. I'm like, you know what? I'm
Now,
gonna
what
learn
group
how
was this? This was in Steve
I don't
Reagan's
even
group?
remember. It, no. This was like I was in like three or four free Facebook groups back then, like
Gotcha,
whoever was
gotcha.
like, I could find back then. And there was just a handful of people. It was a small percentage of people that were just really, really mean. But I was like, those are the people that I paid attention to. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to learn how to do this business, and I'm going to help people, and I'm going to show people. I'm going to put love into this, and like anyone that I can help. And then so that's kind of why, like, I just, it helped shape my mentality towards life and Amazon and eBay and stuff. But I started to learn how to do it. And I remember, like, right when I started doing Amazon, I signed up for somebody's like OA list. I didn't even know what it was. I don't even know how I met this guy, but he would for like $60 a month, he was giving me leads, and I didn't even $60 was so expensive to me. And I would never do this now. I split the list with a friend, like we both paid 30. I would never do this now. Like I would if I buy a subscription from somebody, I pay it only I'm logging in. Like I was unethical and just like I just I was from doing all the drugs and stuff. Like my mind wasn't morally right. Like I did a lot of immoral things in my opinion. But I so I was like $30 each because $30 was an insane amount of money to me back then. Especially when I started with Amazon with a couple hundred bucks, and I'm grinding my eBay. So but we signed up for the list. I remember like I'd sent in like some stuff from the Disney store. I bought some stuff on like Disney.com, some plushes and stuff like that. A couple of them did okay, and then a couple of them I lost money on. I think I quit the list after a few months. But like it kind of like let me get in the swing of things. But this was like the summer of 2014-ish, maybe. Get into like the first like Black Friday of like 2014. I ended up getting like my biggest payout from Amazon. It was like $1,000. And I took that $1,000 cash and I spent it all in one day. I'd never spent that much on inventory in my life. Spent it all in and it all flipped. Everything was gone.
It's a good feeling. That's a good feeling.
And I still had trouble with Amazon then. Like I just wasn't that good. It was hard. And like I would go like I'm this is zero exaggeration. I would go to a Walmart. No joke. And I would spend 7, 8, 9 hours in there scanning every single item on the toy aisle. Every item, not skipping one, not skipping a couple. I'm not like I scanned 8 items. I'm like, oh man, I just scanned 1,000 items. No, I would scan thousands and thousands and thousands of items because it's like I didn't have a job. I had no money coming in besides a little bit of eBay and Amazon. So I had all the time in the world, but not a lot of money. So I just did what I had no clue how to learn this business. Like I didn't know about. I don't even know if Keepo was around back then. So I just scanned and scanned and scanned, and I would write notes in my book, like, okay, this item here, right? I'd write the UPCs down on stuff. Like it was just so like Stone Age. I just like I was scanning, scanning. I got through my first Christmas because I didn't know how to do Amazon, and I would scan for 8 hours in the store, and I would get maybe 2 items profitable. And I'm like, I'm complaining in the green room and in Facebook groups, like, how are you guys doing this? How are you making money? Black Friday, Christmas came, and that became easy, and then like. We fold into the following year, and there was a lot of clearance. Remember, right after Christmas, there was a ton of clearance at this Target by my house. I walked in, there was like 300 video games on clearance, and I was so new to Amazon. I scanned this PS3 game, Uncharted, I don't know, 2 or 3 or something like that for PS3. They had like 100 copies of this game for like $4. You scan it, it's like 25 or 30 on Amazon. But I was so scared of. So I bought like 5 or 10 copies, but there was like 100 there. And this is nobody was doing Amazon then. So I bought my 5 or 10 copies. I sent them into Amazon. They all sold. I went back to Tar they sold like that. So I went back to Target like 2 or 3 weeks later. They were all still there, same price, everything. No one touched them. Maybe like a couple got sold, but I bought the rest of them. And they all sold. But like that was back then. You could like buy a couple and you could come back in a week and there'd still be those all those clearance items were still there. Now
Because
you
it wasn't
freaking
known.
you turn your head to grab your cart, now someone's already got them, you know.
So that brings you to a good point. Do you feel, because a lot of people that want to get into Amazon or do Amazon FBA, and they see, you know, videos, like, for instance, I used to do videos going in Walmart, right? And I was uploading once a day, every day, 5 days a week, two lives, like live in the flesh, right? So when you have somebody like that and you have multiple people like that, that constantly show products, do you feel that the Amazon marketplace gets saturated and somebody, it might steer somebody away? Or do you think there's plenty of room to enter the market as long as you are like doing your research?
I mean, yes, there's definitely places to enter the market. I think there's, so it's a mixture of like, say like you go out to Target today and you find 100 of this one clearance item and it's profitable today. Everything looks good on Keepa, blah, 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 blah. I think it's a mixture of, there's just so many sellers. Cause like if you're finding that for, you know, $100 clearance item for, I don't know, $50 or whatever it is, then so is everybody else. You know, every store is a little bit different, but just because I fell in this habit too, because that's how I used to make my money. It was just, I could go to Target and scan. I could find common items at retail, common items at clearance, send them in and make money. Now, like I fell in the habit of doing that, where I kept sending in, doing that model, but then everybody else was doing that model. So it's like, oh man, this is a $20 profit clearance item today. You go home, you ship it in right away. You ship it out the same day, UPS. It gets live at Amazon in 3 days. There's 75 new sellers on it and we're losing $8 now, you know? So I think it's just a mixture of just so many people in the marketplace. And it's a mixture of like, you know, people that show videos and stuff. It's not like, and so it's like what I learned to do is like, if I know something's on clearance or if it's like someone's doing a video of it, like I try to buy it and like, I'll hold on to it and let all you guys sell it first. And then I'll go sell it, because I fall in that habit of like, everyone's out buying it, I'm buying it, I'm sending it in. And then we're all, it just all fights to the bottom. And it's like, then, and there's people that don't have their fees set up right. So that's like, they think they're making money, but they're actually losing money. So they think, oh, I can go lower than everybody, but I'm still making $4, but they're having, you know, they have the wrong fee set up. So they're actually losing $4. And then it's just a mixture of all that. And I think some inexperience and so many sellers, and the clearance being so readily available that, like, if you can find it anywhere, everyone's going to find it. It's going to probably tank. So if you can't afford to buy it and hold on to it for 3, 4, 5, 6 months, like, it's probably a mistake. So I kind of like totally almost stopped buying clearance, unless I know it's either like a one-off situation where this Target probably just clearanced it off and no one else did, or if I can just hold on to it until everybody else sells out, because otherwise you're going to be busting your hump to break even, make a small percentage, or even lose a small percentage. Because I did that for years, where I was so stubborn to get out of that habit of doing that, because that's how I made money on Amazon for 5 years, of just going to Target and getting the random clearance that, you know, and it's just, so, and I kept doing it. Like, I think my last time I did it was like, you know, a lot of times when the, like, Walmart will do their clearance Legos, you know, I would buy them up and send them all in. And by the time they would get in, it's like, I just freaking spent 10 grand on Legos. And I did all this work, and it's like, you know, you probably, what, you made like $1,000 or $800, and it's like after the returns and all the hard work and the sweat and everything, but it's like, dude, I broke my back to break even or small, you know? So I was like, all right, I got to start changing up my business model. Like, but like, there is definitely room for a ton of people on Amazon. It's just, you have to figure out a way to make money that, like, the thing is, like, if a lot of people are talking about it on Instagram and stuff, then there's a chance that it's probably not as profitable as it seems. Like, it could be, but like, the way I make money on Amazon, if I blabbed it out to the world the way I made money on Amazon, it wouldn't be profitable anymore. And so, like, you know, I share with some friends, close friends and stuff, and I give them ideas of how I'm making money on Amazon, but I tried to figure out a way to make money on Amazon that is not everybody doing it, because I know it wouldn't be a sustainable business model, you know, if there was, you know, thousands of people doing it that way. So you just got to figure out which way works for you. Because there is so much room. Like, there's room for every, you know, a ton of people.
So much room. I think part of the reason why I was showing it, because people ask me all the time. They would ask me and say, hey, you know, why did you show all your products or most of your products? Or why did you do lives and show people in real time what you were getting and all this other stuff? Because every time you get something, the tank, you know, the price tanks or whatnot. And I think I found myself falling in love more with creating the content.
Yeah.
As opposed to selling on Amazon. Not a lot of people go that way, because somebody who is successful on Amazon would say, hey, you know what? This is working. I'm going to stay with this. We're just going to scale this up. And, you know, right now at the time, you know, when I first started YouTube really wasn't making much. And I said, but I really enjoyed creating content. So I think that's kind of like reason why I even transitioned to doing podcasting, because I love creating content. I love talking to people. I love being in a room where there are smarter people than me. If I'm in a room and I'm the smartest person in the room, then I'm in the wrong fucking room. You know what I mean? That's how I look at it. You know, I want to be in a room where everybody is smarter than me. So I feel like people like you and others that we'll have are going to help educate, at least give people an idea as to, hey, you know what? You don't need to go out there and get this crazy job. Or if you're worrying about, you know, where this is going to come from or that's going to come from, you know, there are ways in right now with 2024 to make money online. And Amazon's one of them, despite what people say. Now, what do you think, like, what's your, like, most profitable item? What do you think, like, is it, you don't have to disclose, like, you know, what exactly it is, but is it like a toy, a grocery item? Is it household? Like, what are some of the categories you like to shop in? Like, what do you find is the most profitable and what margin is that?
I'm probably, I don't know, 95% toys. Because that's, like, when I first started doing Amazon, I just learned the toy markets. You know, because that was, you know, what I knew was toys and video games. So I do a little bit of video games and a lot of toys. And that's just what I started with. That's what I got the knowledge in. And, like, scanning all those hundreds of thousands of items over the years, like, helped me learn, like, the discontinued market. So, like, I like going to stores that are, like, small chains, maybe one-off here and there toy stores that I can walk into a store and I know, oh, that's old. Oh, that's 5 years old. Oh, I remember that from Toys R Us 6 years ago. Is there still an Amazon listing? Like, so I love walking into small chain stores that still carry really old toys.
Do you have an Ollie's out there?
I don't. My closest Ollie's is like 18 hours away.
Oh my God. I love Ollie's.
Dude, I know. I used to love that's a, when I lived in Nashville, Tennessee, when I first started getting into Amazon and stuff like that, I remember Ollie's was in my wheelhouse. I would go scan grocery items at Ollie's. I remember my first flip, my first really, really good flip on Amazon, me and Resale Rabbit, John Dugan. I don't know if you remember him. We went to Ollie's together. We found this Kraft barbecue sauce. It was like, I didn't know what the word discontinued was back then, but we bought these barbecue sauces for like a buck and they were selling for like $20 each, which was maddening to me. Like that someone would do that. And the thing is, I undersold it because there was nobody on the listing and I didn't know how to know what it was worth or what it would sell for. So I just listed them for, I was like, let's try $20. And like, I think we found like 30 of them each. They all sold in like an hour. Like, and because I think we had merchant fulfilled them then. And I think obviously looking back now, we definitely undersold them because they all sold like that. Like one person bought them all, you know, from me. And it was like, you know, so that's kind of like how I got into like, it was like, you know, my things. But yeah, I would say toys are definitely my most profitable. My, say like my ROI and stuff is, it really varies. Like, it just depends on the situation. Like one, I'll look at it is how much work is involved in prepping this item. Do I have to remove store stickers? Is there a freaking Ollie's sticker on that? Like some stores are in the butt where it's like, I'm making, you know, say there's a $5 item, but you make like $2 on it. But then you have to remove store stickers off 100 of them. I'm just kind of like, if I'm having a bad day and I'm not doing good on product, I'll grab it. You know, if like, but if I'm finding plenty of opportunity, then I would leave something like that. But like, you know, so I would spend $50 on an item to make $10. If I knew one, okay, what type of toy is it? Is it like an electronical toy that someone may not know how to work and they're going to return it? And then, you know, like, or is it like something I know has a very low risk of, you know, scam, return, breaking, stuff like that? I'd spend $50 to make $10 on a toy. If it like, I could flip it like that. Sure thing. Definitely. You know, or like $50 to make $10 on like a Lego or something. I would totally do that. Cause I always like try to assess like, you know, is it like, you know, I don't know if you remember like 2 years ago, those like Magic Mixies, like things that came out, they were like,
those
big things. I had bought so many of those and like they didn't do very well profitability wise.
Did you buy them last year when they were marked down to $35? Are you talking about when they first came out? $60 and they were selling for like $140, right? Something like that.
Yeah, but I think Amazon kept coming in stock and I was a mixture of like holding out and everybody kept coming on it and like trying to break even. So I held out.
There was 428 sellers on that listing, I remember.
I ended up selling
428. Unbelievable.
It was insane. I ended up selling them all probably for like around 90 or 100, but after fees, prep costs, shipping, all that. But the thing is that these items were highly returned because people didn't know how to like work them. Cause I'm in a lot of toy Facebook groups where like moms and kids and like, oh, I got this thing. I don't know. I guess the instructions were kind of confusing or something. So people would think they were broken when they weren't and they would return them used. So like, you know, you have to think about it when you're selling an item. What is the likelihood it's going to get returned? What is the likelihood someone's going to want to scam you? What type of brand it is? Because like even for certain brands, you got to be careful because like certain brands are more highly scammed than others. You know, like people will just buy it and like swap it out with something else. So like I always take that stuff into account when I'm going after ROI and all that, my margin and everything like that. So like my margin, you know, my ROI, it could be 20%, it could be 80%. Sometimes it's over 100, not often. Like it's not for me, at least I'm not that good at Amazon anymore, or it's just harder marketplace. Like I remember back in the day, like I would go to Target and like, I remember scanning, like one day scanning these routers, they were on clearance for like, I think like $150 and they were $100 profit each. And I left them because they weren't 100% ROI. But like now it's like you left a $150 item that you could have made $100 on.
Right.
Myself. But back then we you're so used to making 100-200% ROI on your items. Like because I was new and like that was just because in the so like I would leave things that anything that was under 100% ROI I would never buy back then because I just didn't know any better. But now I would slap the crap out of myself if I could for not going after that stuff. So it's like now I'm fighting to hope to make 50% on a toy, you know?
Dude, the crazy thing is like Walmart, right? Walmart had always had a lot of clearance. They had always had like quantity, but the quality lacked a lot of times. But Target wouldn't go as hard on the clearance as frequently, but when Target did go hard on their clearance, it was like, holy crap, you could buy this. It was like quality clearance that you were buying at $4 or $5 that you could sell. They were $30-$40 items and you would just go to store to store to store. Unbelievable the power of the age old profession of flipping, right? Flipping in general, buying low, selling for a profit. I mean, it's almost in every type of category and any wake of business, right? You buy low, whether you buy from a distributor. And I'm going to ask you a question right now, because this is something that I got all the time is, you know, people would always say, you know, the morality of it, right? The morality, oh, you're buying from clearance. You're taking out of somebody who couldn't necessarily afford that clearance item. And, you know, and before I get to your response, my response would always be, it's out for sale. I'm going to buy it, whether it's one or five, because the person that's little Timmy is not walking in on crutches, right? Coming in from the Christmas story saying, oh, I need to buy this $15 Funko Pop because I'm poor. And my attitude has always been, if you were unfortunate or less fortunate and can't afford things, you probably shouldn't be buying that clearance in the first place. And I know that's a hard stance, and people that know, you know, from my channel and before, that's just the way I roll. But like, how do you feel? Like, do you get a lot of kickback when you go in and you're buying these clearance items for like low prices, and you know, you're filling up your cart, sometimes two, maybe even three, maybe even four, right? And you're walking out of here and you got people looking at you and asking you questions. Like, do you feel like there's a moral obligation to leave clearance, or you lean on the fence like, hey, look, it's out for sale, it's commerce, you know, I'm gonna buy it like anybody else could buy it.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely. So like, it's funny, like, so like I don't get much pushback anymore. Like I used to years ago. So since I travel a lot, I'm always on the road when I'm traveling. So I found a great way to word what I'm doing while I'm traveling. And so like, say I'm checking out at Target or Walmart and I've got 2-3 carts of clearance and they're like, oh, what is all this stuff for? Are you donating it? I'm like, no, actually me and my fiance, we actually take a road trip, you know, once a year, we travel around the country for like 3 months, 2-3 months. And to help fund our road trip, we resell stuff on eBay and Amazon to help fund our trip, which isn't lying at all. Like that's the truth. And 99% of the time, it's a mixture of, oh, that's cool, or oh my gosh, that's so amazing, like I wish I could do that, or like they like when I, because like when I used to say, oh, I just resell stuff, and like sometimes you get snooty little attitudes, or like, you know, but when since I started wording it that way, like I get more love, and like sometimes like I get into conversations with some people. Like I was talking to a Target manager the other day, and I told him what I was doing. He's like, "Oh my gosh, that's so cool." He's like, "Man, you know, like I remember back in COVID, you know, like I had like a couple months off of work, and I just got in my car and I brought my tent and I was like," he was telling me for like 10 minutes about his road trip stories, you know, about how we like, so we got into a full on conversation about taking road trips, and like people are so receptive to that. To like, yeah, this is how I fund, you know, my lifestyle, to travel the country. And then like, you know, like sometimes we'll get into talking about movies. Cause like one of my favorite things to do on my road trips is eat amazing food. And I love to go visit filming locations to my favorite shows and favorite movies. So like all I have pinpointed, like where they film movies and shows on the map. So I'll go visit them. Like the other day we stopped in Preston, Idaho, where they filmed Napoleon Dynamite, which was cool. Like I've seen that movie 100 times, you know. Yeah. Give me some of your tots. You know, it was so
Tina,
cool. I
got to eat the ham.
Ham. I got to go to the tetherball court where Napoleon played tetherball, and we walked to this place, and it's like a Head Start elementary school, and it was in session. Like I didn't know that, so I walked out, and I was kind of like feeling weird to go out with my camera. There's like on the side over here, there were some like little kids playing like away from the tetherball court, and then behind the tetherball court there were some kids swinging on the swings, like older kids, maybe like 8, 9 or whatever. And but I, so I was, you know, let's go, we're here, we drove all this way, let's just go take a picture. I felt weird because I'm going on school grounds to take a picture, and I went and held the tetherball court into my girls taking pictures of me, and the little kids in the background, that's Napoleon's tetherball. Like these were like 8-year-old kids. Like, how do you even know what Napoleon is?
Dynamite, right?
It's probably the biggest thing that happened to that town, because it's like, sure, there's nothing there.
They and probably so, have some kind of like plaque inside or some kind of like, yep, you know, dedication kind of thing. Totally.
But it was so cool. Like I, you know, so it's like I'll get into conversations about like movies and film and stuff with people while I'm traveling, because that's one of my favorite things to do. But yeah, like I rarely get kickback or pushback or rudeness from people. But the funny thing is that since I'm doing the road trips, we go to a lot of rural stores. I'll go into stores where stuff, like you go to the clearance aisle, it's got all the stuff. And like you walk up to the toy or whatever, and you put your finger across it, there's a huge cake of dust. So that tells me that's been sitting there for months. So clearly nobody that can't afford it, or like, you know, is having trouble, you know, like clearly nobody's lining up to buy that. Nobody bought that at full price. It's been sitting here for 6 to 8 months
how long,
on clearance, yeah, with the dust. So clearly it's not an item that everybody's swarming out to get, that everybody needs. So like, obviously I'm going to walk by, it's profitable, I'm going to buy it. And I don't feel, you know, like bad about it. Like, cause clearly somebody else had that opportunity for months to go buy that. Like right. I mean, this is not just, you know, whatever, like I don't chase super hot things. Like if everyone, like, cause I don't like to like fight in crowds to get one, or like, you know, when everyone's going after the Starbucks, yep, families, like, yep, I don't want to fight and I don't want to push. You, yep, know, like, I'm not trying to get, same, I don't want to, you know, like with the sports cards and stuff. I remember like, yep, I would walk during like COVID and stuff, the sports cards, Pokemon cards were going crazy. I would walk into Target and Walmart and I would see the big lines for the sport cards. I would see the big roar of everyone running and ripping stuff open. I would literally walk to the back, go grab my Legos, walk out to the front while they're still waiting in line. And, you know, maybe I didn't make as much as I did. I don't know. Who knows? But I did something that nobody else was doing, and I didn't have to fight anybody. I didn't have to stab anybody to get my Yoda Legos.
Right, right. Right, right. You know, and what's crazy is during that Pokemon craze, I started getting into Pokemon cards again as a collector, and I would open up packs on a, you know, on a separate, on the YouTube channel, and I would like do all this crazy stuff, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. And I remember going to those stores, like you said, like Target, Walmart, they're waiting outside 6 a.m., they're waiting for the distributor to come, distributor doesn't, mm-hmm, show up. I'm hearing things of like people are following the, you know, the person to their vehicles and trying to follow them, yeah, to the next store, just all this crazy stuff. And like you, I never wanted to be a part of that. I didn't even like going into Black Fridays. I never went into a, yeah, Black Friday until I started reselling. And then I was like, all right, mm-hmm, let me try it because of content. I was like, I'll go in and I'll check it out. Back when it was, you know, actually Black Friday, you wait, you got to go, mm-hmm, in and all this other stuff. But that kind of geared me to get accounts with distributors for, mm-hmm, the Pokemon cards. And I was fortunate, yeah, enough to get in on one of the distributors before they kind of closed it, because they found out everybody was getting accounts to resell on Amazon kind of thing. So I was actually, yeah, fortunate, and I still have the account, which I get some stock from them. And yeah, that was a crazy time, man. You know, you mentioned that you like to travel. And I know, because when we had talked when you were in Florida, you were showing me, it looked like this Google Maps thing, and you had, at the time, it might have been hundreds, if not thousands, of pins. And I would be like, what are all those pins, bro? Like the whole country was blanketed in these pins. And you're like, That's each pin represents a store, a new store that I've gone in and sourced. And I was doing some research and I saw that you've been to, at least at the time that I had looked, you've been to over 5,000 stores in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm at over 7,000 now.
Whoa, 7,000 stores. Tell me about that. What was your thought process when you were first of all, how are you logging them? Is it through Google Maps? Like, what are you doing to log them? And then two, are you logging them to say, hey, I went to all these, or is it kind of like, I know what products are in these stores?
So I do a mixture of all that. So you just on Google Maps, there's an option to hit save and you can put a little icon or color. But then you can also put a note in that store. So like if I'm traveling, I'll put the date of the date I went there, January 1st, 2024. I spent $650 at the store. I'll put a little description of what I bought and I'll put something in there like this is a good store. Return to the store if you're in the area. They have good clearance here when you come through. I'll even put a note like, oh, I left XYZ to see if it's there next time I come there, or check to see if they stock these. And then also if I meet an employee or a manager that was nice, I'll put their name in it, because that right there is probably one of the best things that has helped me make relationships and get more products on top of that as a bonus. So like I would go into a video game store. And I had like a manager, Sarah, I don't know, whatever, who was super helpful to me in, say, North Carolina, Charlotte. And I would put her name in the thing, how much I spent, blah, 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 blah. And then say, just in case I ever come back to that store. And I actually had this happen, Sarah just made the name up. I went back to that store like a year later. I happened to be on a road trip, happened to be in that same town again. And I walked into the store and I asked, hey, they ended up letting me go into their back room and dig through all their games. Ooh. Sarah did, or whatever her, the fake manager's name is. Real story.
That's golden. That's golden.
And so, yeah. And they let me scan for like an hour. And I ended up making a couple grand off this store. But I put all this in my notes and I went back the following year. And I'm like, hey, man, I was here about a year ago. At first I said, hey man, do you have any stock in the back? I could see their back room. I'm like, hey, I came here last year. Is it cool? Blah, blah, blah. Is it cool if I, scan through again? They're like, sorry, we don't let customers back here. I was like, oh, I came here about a year ago. Sarah was the manager then, and they're like, oh man, Sarah's not here anymore. I'm like, and they're like, oh, Sarah. I'm like, yeah, I came in about a year ago and she actually let me dig through the back case there. And, I was able to buy a bunch of games and hung out with them for like an hour. Like I chatted with the manager, the employees, we were mm-hmm. cool and having good conversations. And then there was a connection between me and his good manager who actually was promoted and sent to another store in another state. Boom, right back in the back room again. When he first told me no, I always put the names of people that I meet. And, I don't ever when I go make relationships, me getting any product is like a bonus. From How to Win Friends and Influence People. There's this quote in there that I love and that I try to live by. This is every time you meet somebody, whether it's, for a quick minute or a lifetime or whatever, it's like you either leave them better off or worse off in life. And so everyone that I meet, even if it's for a quick moment, I want to try to leave them in a better place. If it's just me meeting them, asking how they're doing, how you feeling, what's going on, try to genuinely get to know that person, whether it's for a minute or a lifetime or whatever. So that's what I always try to do when I meet. And then if I get product or anything like that as a bonus, that's amazing. But I just want to try to be nice to people and be cool with people, because you're going to get so much farther in life if you're cool with people and it's things just work out. People are just going to generally be happier. People are going to want to work with you more. And I think that's why I don't get much pushback and like people poke at me for reselling. It's because it's like, how the fuck are you going to be a jackass to someone who's being nice to you? And they're like, once in a while, someone will be kind of rude, but I'll still be nice to them on top of that. And I'll just break through them like an onion, bro. Keep being nice. And they can kind of give me pushback, or they can have a snooty look on their face. Like I went to a video game store the other day. The guy didn't say anything, but it was kind of standoffish, because he knew I was a reseller. I just kept being nice to him. Hey man, how's your day going? How you doing today? How are you feeling? And he was kind of, by the end of the transaction, he was like my buddy, but he was very standoff. So it's you just peel people like an onion sometimes, and just be nice to them. Don't let the personal, how they are, how they're feeling, get to you, because you don't know what everybody's going through.
God bless you, Jameson, because you have a lot more patience than I do. with, you know, I've always said, you know, those of you that have seen my last channel on reselling, you know, I have a very low tolerance for certain situations, and I won't even get into it, but God bless you. Yeah. But I can tell you, listen, I can tell you now, as I stand here today, that I actually 100% agree with you. If you had asked me this 1, 2, 3 years ago, I'd be like, dude, you're wrong. You know, fuck these people. You got to give it to them back. They're talking shit. You got to talk shit back. Fuck them. Like, or they're going to keep doing it to other people. But I feel like I've matured in my own mental. And I think I had to take a step back away from what I was into. You know, I was in I was in 8 to 10 Walmarts a day. Every fucking day, 7 days a week for like 3 years straight, dealing with different scenarios and situations. And eventually just something hit me and I was like, I got to stop this. I need to take myself out of this.
I get it, bro.
Because I felt myself molding, because I enjoyed creating content. I felt myself molding towards a content creator that I didn't want to be versus what I wanted to be versus how I started. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that's either here or there. But I agree 100% with you, man. Your Instagram shows that, because every single picture, this man is smiling. Every single there's nobody happier in this world than Jameson. I can promise you, there's nobody happier than Jameson.
I have my moments, bro. I have my moments, dude.
Listen, we all do. We all do.
I get mad sometimes. I mean, listen, I don't know if you saw on my Instagram where I smashed that Funko Pop.
I did see that one. I did see that. And I said, you know what? It's just a natural reaction.
Get out of that thing.
I mean, listen, being on the road so much, this is something I used to struggle with, is being on the road so much. What are you eating on the road? Right? Because you're pretty fit, bro. And I've seen your past. You seem to be in good shape. You seem to be healthier than in the past. And, you know, what are you doing, like, eating on the road, being on the road so much? And, like, are you exercising? Like, what's your regimen like when you're doing this type of work constantly?
It's took a lot of transitioning to try to be as healthy as I can on the road, because it is hard to do that, because, like, you're traveling and it could get late, and sometimes you're in a small town and the only thing they got is McDonald's or, you know, stuff like that. So it can get challenging. About a little over a year ago, I was, you know, just not feeling good about myself. I was, you know, almost 250 pounds and just like, it was the biggest I had gotten in since, you know, because like, I was like, I think I was like right before COVID hit, I was like 195, the slimmest I'd ever been. And then COVID happened and, you know, everybody put on a ton of weight and started drinking alcohol every day and, you know, and eating unhealthy. And then you fast forward after COVID, like I'm 200, I gained like 50 pounds during, you know, for that few years over COVID and just drinking almost every day alone in my house and, you know, not being healthy. And so last year I was like, you know what? It was like, I think it was like January 3rd. You know what? I woke up one morning. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to see if I can go till, I don't know, 8 o'clock tonight and not eat anything, just liquids today. And if I can do that, I'm going to eat like a king tonight. I'm going to order chicken wings, hamburger, pizza, whatever I want. No feeling guilty about it. Just eat whatever you eat like a king. And so I made it the whole day. I just did, you know, water, black coffee, and then like, you know, my green juice, celery and stuff like that. Made it through the whole day. That night, you know, burgers, french fries, I ate it. And like, I felt good. I felt like a champ. Like it was so weird. It sounds weird, but like I felt like a champion. Like I went all day without eating. And you know what? And you know, next day, you know what? I'm gonna do it again. And that may not be the healthiest way to start fasting. Like, you know, whatever.
But that's how you shocked your system. You have to like shock your system. You know what I mean?
Exactly. And it was a challenge. It was fun, but it made me eat what I wanted. It allowed me to eat what I wanted to eat, but not feel guilty about it, because I would eat, you know, bad meals and then I would feel like shit. And then I would feel like shit mentally, physically. And then I would eat more meals to feel good. And then it's like you get in this cycle. So I just did that every day for like a month. And it was like, holy crap, I lost like, you know, I don't know, 5 pounds in a month or something. And then I basically did that. You know, I don't eat like crap every single meal, every single night. Like I do a lot of juicing. I'm getting a ton of vitamins, celery, ginger every day. I drink tons of water. I own a Berkey water filter. So like I have good, clean, healthy water.
Oh, that's a good. That's the one that comes in like that stainless steel, right? It's pretty.
Yep, with black.
Like $400 or $500. Yep. The
floral, yeah.
I've heard about those.
I've had it for almost 3 years now. I think I paid like $600 for it. And like the water filters last for like 5,000 gallons or something like that. Amazing. And so, you know, fast forward a year, like I'm still juicing every day. I'm drinking water, drinking coffee. I don't exercise as much as I should. I've probably only exercised maybe, I don't know, 20 times in the last, you know, 2-3 months, maybe, you know, not too much. But, you know, fast forward, I've been doing this for about a year now. I'm down, like, I think I'm at like 188 now, and I was up to almost 250. So I lost like about 50 pounds.
That's awesome.
And, you know, I eat what I want. I don't feel guilty. I feel better than I have ever felt. I actually did a new challenge. Today is actually 1 week. I went gluten-free for a week. And that was probably one of the most challenging things I've ever done as far as health and diet goes. Because I love French fries. I love wings. I love donuts. I love bread. I love pizza. Like, I love that stuff. So I just do different things to like try to, you know, but it's like a drug addict. You got to take it a day at a time. Like, I can't say like, I'm going to fast for the next 365 days and, you know, like go insane, but take it day by day. And if you fail, get up and try again tomorrow. Like, you don't have to be Arnold Schwarzenegger fit, you know, but do small things, you know, it's like the compound effect. Do small little things you can do every day for the rest of your life. You know,
What's your favorite thing to eat on the road?
Oh man.
Like either healthy or unhealthy. Like what do you gravitate to?
My favorite foods are unhealthy. All of them. I love pizza. I love chicken wings. I love hamburgers. I love French fries. I love dessert. I love cookies. I love cake, bro. Like if I could feel and look like this for the rest of my life and I didn't have to work or make money, I would sit on the couch every day for the rest of my life and watch Netflix and play video games and eat like shit. If I could feel good and, you know, like not have to work at anything, like that would be a dream life for me to just like crap all day long. Like I live as healthy as I can to be able to eat like crap when I want to. Like, so I do all the healthy things that I can do. So that allows me to eat like crap because I love eating like crap. You know,
well, speaking of eating like crap, we got the Super Bowl coming up, right?
Yes, sir.
And the Super Bowl is home to pizza and wings and fries and all that kind of stuff. And by the time this airs, the Super Bowl would have already happened. But if you could give your prediction right now, who are you going with? You going with Chiefs or you going with 49ers?
So I'm going to go with the 49ers only because we have a few friends in our friend group that are super huge 49ers fans. And I love to see them. Like we watched the game with them last night and I get excited watching the game, watching them get excited. So like I'm cheering for the 49ers just because my friends are fans. And like we were watching last night and I put $50 in the game or whatever, like on some prop bet. I don't know anything about sports betting, but my friends that are the 49ers fans do. So like it makes it more fun to me because I'm rooting for the guys to like to get their yards or whatever, you know. So like it makes it fun and interesting and gives me something to cheer about. So but I'm going with 49ers and I'll probably throw $100 on the game or something like that on the sports books or whatever and have a little fun.
I'm going with 49ers as well, just because I can't stand Taylor Swift. Sorry, Swifties. It's not that I can't stand Taylor Swift. Let me backtrack that. It's not that I can't stand Taylor Swift. I just can't stand the coverage that Taylor Swift is getting during the NFL football games. Stop, NFL, just stop. I need to see Kansas City lose, because if I'm going to see Taylor Swift, she's going to be crying on the Jumbotron when 49ers win. So let's go 49ers on that one. One major question is, you know, how does somebody get to 1 million in sales selling on Amazon?
That is a good freaking question, man. A mixture of that question and another question, like I think somebody asked me before, is like, if you had to start Amazon all over today, you know, could you do it? And like, I give the super honest answer that I don't know if I could be successful at Amazon. Say I started today. I don't know if I could do it. This is not to discourage people. This is just for me. Cause like, I don't think I'm very smart when it comes to Amazon. Like I'm not very intricate when like looking at Keepa. Like I can look at a Keepa chart, blah, blah, blah. But like, there are people that are like so good with it. And I'm just like, I don't understand that. And you could explain it to me 1,000 times and I just don't get it. Right. Like, I just don't, like, I don't, I learned how to use a spreadsheet and I suck at it. Like making spreadsheets, like my spreadsheets are disgustingly awful. And I just started learning this year. Like I started using Keepa like 2-3 years ago, you know, like know, there's so many softwares out there that people are really good at. So it's like, I don't think I could compete with Amazon today had I start today. But a lot of the younger guys that are starting, they're so much smarter than I am. Like I know people that are, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20 that are tripling my sales, you know, ordering from their college dorm room, you know, OA and stuff. And they're, so it's like, there's so many tools out there. You know, you have all the different tools. You know, there's people love that, you know, are using Selleramp, and like there's so many amazing things you can do with Keepa. So like if you're good with those things, I think if you're starting Amazon today, like you could outgrow me in a year. Like I don't think I could redo it because I don't know how to do that stuff. And I try and I try and I try and I just end up getting frustrated learning, you know, all the different tools and softwares and like how to like learn how to use all that stuff. I'll admit, I'm not smart at that stuff. I suck at that stuff. I know how to go into a store, scan product. I know how to build relationships. I know how to find wholesalers. I know how to make friends and connections with wholesalers. Like if I go to a wholesaler and it's like, we don't deal with Amazon sellers. Oh, why is that? Like I can get in on that. Like, you know, like those are things that I'm good at. So I double down on what I know how to do. I'm not smart when it comes to computers. I suck ass. So I think if you're young and you're wanting to get an Amazon, if you can learn how to do all the softwares and things like that, you will be light years ahead of me in a year. So
Okay.
that's,
Honest
I guess,
answer, honest
the advice
answer.
I can give.
Yeah, no, nobody asks resellers this question, or nobody asks business people in general, but I know as a former reseller, or as a, I guess, reseller, but when it comes to tax time, I know we don't give tax advice because we leave that up to the professionals that deal with tax codes in different states because things can be variable. But how does Jameson prepare for tax season? Like, what do you have a process where you say, okay, I'm going to put X amount of percentage away per disbursement? Or like, what's your process look like to prepare for tax? Because I can tell you that a lot of people kind of get scared off because of they feel like they may be irresponsible with that and they don't want to get caught owing this huge amount because of a flawed process. So, is there some kind of advice you could give to people to help them either not be afraid or just kind of give them like a little heads up, like, hey, I found this helpful when it comes to tax time?
Yeah, definitely, man. And that I would say out of everywhere in the business, that was the area that I struggled with the most throughout the years. And I'm starting to like get I'm getting into all those rooms where I'm the dumbest guy in the room and I'm learning from them how to do this stuff behind, you know, learning the numbers and everything like that. And just over a year ago, I hired a bookkeeper to do all that and go through my credit cards and like organize everything the way it should be. So like taxes has become such a breeze, you know, in the sense of what they used to be, you know. So like I have my bookkeeper do my books every month. She has access to all, you know, my credit card logins, my bank info, everything. She puts everything into categories for QuickBooks. You know, if she has any questions, she'll put each transaction in the spreadsheet in a category that she doesn't know. And then we'll hop on a call every couple of months and she'll be like, all right, what is this? What is this? What category is this? What category is this? And then she'll put them all in the categories. And so we have, by the end of the year, we have everything mapped out that's very easy to understand. All the numbers are good and correct and everything's, you know, where it needs to be. And I give that to my CPA and he'll ask me a few questions, a few back and forth. Like taxes have gotten, you know, as easy as they can get, they've gotten easy. But like, you know, honestly, things started to really, really go well and smooth for me once I got the bookkeeper because she like puts everything where I understand it better and like how to keep the numbers in line and everything like that. So like, I would get stressed around tax season every year and like, you know, if like you would lose a receipt, you know, oh, what happened to this? Like, you know, I remember one time I was walking out of Walmart like one year, and this was the first time, like when I was still like one of my first years doing it, I was like loading up my cart and I had like spent a couple grand at a Walmart and my receipt freaking blew away in the wind and I'm chasing it down
Oh,
in the parking lot.
no.
I caught it with my foot, I went down to grab it, it blew away again and it ended up getting away from me. And like, you know, like that I was stressed out about that for like, you know, like months because it's like, oh crap, I don't remember, you know, like, and it was just like silly, stupid stuff. Like I was so bad back then, you know, and like it, you know, I learned a lot and getting, you know, like you said earlier, being in the room where you're the dumbest person. So like you start learning and asking questions, and it's like, every year I'm getting better and better at the books and the taxes and everything like that. And it's getting to the point where it's like, you know, taxes are very, very stressful and there's so much that goes into them and it's like so draining. And now it's like to the point where it's like, I can breathe, and it's like I feel a lot better and more confident going into them and getting them done right.
But yeah, all right, cool. So that's great. I mean, that's So I guess the tip is, you know, either try to get somebody to do your bookkeeping, or what do you feel about like the Intuit, the like kind of like self bookkeeping thing?
That's Intuit. That's is that QuickBooks, right?
QuickBooks, yeah.
Oh, okay. I subscribe to that and I use it. My bookkeeper does that. She puts everything into QuickBooks. So I don't like, yeah, I'm not good with it myself. Like I set up all my stuff to do it and everything, but she goes in, she has my QuickBooks info, she does everything, and I can log in and I can look at everything. But I mean, it works fine for us. I like it. I mean, I've got no complaints. It seems pretty good to me. I haven't had any issues, and you know, I'll continue using that and continue using the bookkeeper. But yeah, start early. Like if I could re-teach myself anything or get anything with Amazon, is like, I would ingrain in my head how important the tax and the numbers thing is, how important that is in the business. Mm-hmm. Like that's like, if you could rewire everything, it's like, that's what you need to get into first. Start learning that as you're learning the business, learn a little bit of that too. Even if you spend an hour, 20, 30 minutes a week, learn that too. Cause you're going to, once you grow so big and you don't know it as well, it's going to become so much more of a headache to learn that stuff. So start learning that quick and early.
Now with the retail arbitrage and online arbitrage, do you see yourself like scaling that business even further? And like in 10 years, do you still see yourself doing this with Amazon, or is this a bridge that could potentially lead to maybe starting another business or something like that?
Yeah, I'm up in the air about that still. I love Amazon. I don't ever want to stop doing it. You know, like I truly, truly am. This is my dream job. Like growing up, I always wanted to be a professional poker player. That was my probably number one dream job. I spent years, you know, with coaches and stuff, hiring coaches, learning things, learning all the softwares of poker. And I got really fairly good at the game where I was an actual profitable winning player. And I would, you know, I would make a couple grand a month profit playing poker back in the day before it got shut down. And then the whole drug thing happened and online poker got shut down. And I got into drugs and everything, and, you know, my life turned upside down and I had to restart. Like I was so passionate about poker, but like Amazon, there's so many similarities. Like I know probably five or six professional poker players that either were pro poker players that now do Amazon, or they were Amazon sellers and now they're professional poker players. Huh. Like, cause there's so much, like, you know, the way you dive in and do your research on product, how you understand hands and odds and like player, you know, to me, there's so many similarities that I enjoy in both. So it's like, I've become to do my dream job, like doing Amazon. So I hope to continue to do it for a long time. I love it. I love to travel. You know, growing up, we were dirt poor. We didn't even own a car. We had to catch the bus and walk everywhere. Like sometimes we couldn't even catch the bus because it was rush hour and it was $1.25 to ride the bus and we couldn't afford it. So we had to walk, you know? So we didn't go anywhere. We didn't go on vacation. We didn't go to Disney World. Like I just went to Universal Studio for the first time in my life last year. Like I've never been to Disney World, you know? So like we didn't do that stuff growing up. So being able to travel is like, I'm fulfilling my childhood dreams, being able to go where I want, be my own boss and have fun and then do the things I enjoy and love. So I want to continue doing that. Honestly, one of my biggest things, I would love to do like content stuff, but I just freaking never bite the bullets. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Like I get, this is the thing I overthink and get into my head about all the time, is that I'm traveling, I'm eating food, I'm going to see, like I could be making so many amazing cool videos and I don't. Like I've been doing this traveling thing for like, you know, whatever, 7 years now. It's like I could be building so many cool YouTube channels. And I could say that would probably be a dream job too, is doing YouTube for a living or making, you know, good money at YouTube or whatever. Even if I could make, you know, $1,000 a month on YouTube, that would be such a dream. But then I get caught up with, I don't know what to talk about. I don't want to talk about the same old Amazon stuff. I don't want my channel to revolve around Amazon. You know, I love Amazon, but I don't want to think, you know, like there's so many great people doing Amazon content. Like they're doing good. Why, you know, I don't need
but
to
that
do that.
But that would be one of the good things about you, though, and the unique things is that you travel around the country so often, and you do it by car or vehicle most of the time.
Yeah.
Right? So you're always around. Like, even if you had, like, a vlog channel and, like, who cares about the products? I want to know, where is Jameson going next? You know what I mean? He was just in Connecticut, but now he's in L.A.? What do you mean? He's in Louisiana now? He's in Montana? What the hell is he doing in Washington State? Like, in all that you said, you eat, right? So like all the food places you go to, I think it would be an interesting vlog. I think I know when you were in Florida, I think we had talked about that, and I was like, man, I was like, you travel everywhere. Like that's like a YouTube channel in itself. Like that's a calling right there.
I know. Bro, every day we had the conversation every day for years prior, and every day since that day going forward, I think about it every day, and I still haven't pulled the trigger. Like, if I jump off this thing, you could give me all the advice in the world right now, and I'll jump off this thing and be like, I don't know what to say. What do I talk about while I'm driving and recording? Like, I don't know what to say. Like,
But listen, on your YouTube channel, right? You started a YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
How many subscribers do you have on there? Do you have over 2,000, I think? Was it over 1,000 or 2,000?
Maybe. I had like 1,500 like maybe.
I kept getting notifications that you were going live. You were going live for a little while. You were live every day, gonna like push through this, you know, whatever I'm feeling to as far as what happened. Do you just stop and said I don't want to do it, or you just kind of got
weird
busy
talking to yourself? Like, so, like it would be weird some days. Like I would get like 20 people on at once, mm-hmm. which is crazy to me that 20 people around the wherever would log on to hang out even for a minute. But then some days, you know, it would usually be like, you know, 3 to 10 people. But some days, like I would be on for like 10 minutes and it would just be me. But it's like, what the hell am I going to talk about to myself? Because obviously, like when I'm live, I can say, hey, do you have any questions? I could kind of share with people. But then it's like you're on by yourself. It's like I ran out of things to talk about. Like I would make little notes on what I could talk about if nobody was asking questions or nobody was on, so I could at least get the record it and then post it when I'm done. But then it would get to the point where it's like one person would come on and they would go away, or two people. And then it was like me by myself for like 3-4 videos. And I was like, I don't even know. Like, I ran, what do I say? What do I talk about? You know, I would try to talk about what I was doing in the day. And like, I would try to figure out what to say. And I would just kept running into blanks. And I would sit there for like 10 seconds, not saying anything. And it just got awkward. And I'm like staring at myself in the camera, and it's weird. And no one's saying anything. And I'm looking at myself and I'm not saying anything. And I would just, and I lost motivation and confidence to do it because nobody would hop on, you know? So it's like, I didn't know what to do.
It's a tricky thing. YouTube is a funny business, man. You know, you could have 200 people watching you one day, and you could have 20 people watching you the next. Mm-hmm. It's really tricky the way the algorithm is set up. So with some of the another question that a lot of people at least have asked me in the past is, how do you handle IP complaints? And I don't mean like just like some brand ambassador sending you some kind of like, you know, letterhead saying, hey, you know, stop selling this. You know, I just crumple it up. I put it in the trash. See you later. Right. But when you get a letter from a law firm threatening litigation, like, do you just say, you know what, it's just not worth the fight. We're just going to pull the listing? Or how do you handle some of those like IP complaints or brands that will say, hey, you don't have the right to sell this product? And do you feel like they have a right to do that? If you were to take that same item and sell it on eBay, you'd be able to sell it no problem. How do you feel about like IP complaints and brands?
They've definitely, it's crazy. Like how, like back when everyone first started Amazon, you know, 5-10 years ago or whatever, it's like none of that stuff even occurred. Like you never even would ever cross your mind, but now it's just come such a common thing. So I'm super niche in the brands that I sell. So like I stick to a certain amount of brands, certain brand names. And I also go with my gut and my feeling, you know, when dealing with new brands. Like I'll look at a product, I'll scan it on the app, and like everything on Keepa could look good. It looks like there's no sudden drop offs. The brand isn't on there, but like something about it doesn't feel right. I'll stay away from it. Like I've probably thrown away money multiple times, you know, because I didn't know the brand. Like I try to stay away from small toy brands. I try to stay away from like the Kickstarter toy brands because like, you know, or like sometimes even medium toy brands. Like, but I try to, you know, wean through what I feel comfortable with and what I don't, like using my intuition, my gut, you know, almost, you know, like reading the situation. If I feel it's good or safe to sell, that saved me a lot of headache from getting IP complaints. But the letters you get in the mail, everyone's situational. Like if it's a brand I'm selling that I happen to find four of at a Walmart, you know, one time randomly, I've never sold it before and I never plan on selling it again. If it's like one product and it was like a $10 item, I have one left, like I'll probably just remove it, delete the listing. I'll ignore the letter and then I'll just, you know, sell the item on eBay. I'll donate it. I'll throw it in a garage sale. Like like, it's just easy. You know, if one item at $10, I'm not too worried about it. Now, if you get in the situation where it's like, oh man, I got 100 of these and I paid $20 each. Okay, what do I do? Okay, so like, what is the brand? Because I know multiple people that have actually been sued, or they've actually went through the legal process. I have a friend that was sued 2 times. He won both cases. He hasn't shared how much money he got, because, you know, you're not supposed to, but he said that he was paid for the issue and the hassle and all that. He was reimbursed for lawyer fees and everything like that. He was sued 2 times by 2 different clothing brands, where it was actually lawsuits on both, and he won both of them because he had proof. He bought them all from legit stores and everything. You know, it's everything is situational, and I don't want to give people advice on what to do, because obviously, he told me to do this on his YouTube video. I'm going to assume So it's all situational, you know. If I get like a letter, so I've emailed them sometimes. Sometimes they're extremely nice, you know. A few years back, maybe not a few, but
You'll like, actually email them back. You'll actually respond to the letter.
I used to. I don't too much anymore. I have had a couple times, but like sometimes they're an asshole. Sometimes they don't respond. But like 4 or 5 years ago, I had found like, I don't know, like 150 Ticket to Ride games in a store, and they were like half off. I bought every single one of them. It was like 8 carts full of them, and I started selling them. Boom, boom, boom. I came on the listing. I had the most out of all the sellers. I had like 100 or 200 units or something like that. And I got hit with a claim. And I had gotten, you know, the notification or whatever. I reached out to the brand owner. You know, we started talking. They were so nice. And I made a mistake here. So they were super nice. I sent them my receipt. I'm like, hey, I bought these at a closing store. They were all half off. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, we were just worried. Like, you came in with a bunch of stock. We didn't know who you were. We were curious to where you got all those from, because, you know, and, you know, they removed the thing. They're like, hey, do you want to buy wholesale direct from us? Here's our info. Reach out. We'll sell you these games at wholesale prices. Wow. And my dumbass even reached out to them. But, like, sometimes you can get lucky, and the brand owners are super, super nice. I've had times where the brand owners were assholes to me, you know. So everything is situational. Honestly, if I have one or two of an item, just I lean on the side of caution. It's like, it's not really worth it. If I don't plan on reselling the item again, I just usually dump it, get rid of it, because it's like, it can be a hassle when they actually hit you with a claim. Like, it's been more challenging to remove claims. I get probably 99% of my claims removed, but I could say probably in the last 6 months, I think I've had one claim and I got it removed. But it's because I'm starting to narrow down on what brands I sell, what categories I sell.
Like, how they act, and yeah.
Yep. And I niche down on the brands that I love and that I like to sell. And I just double and triple down on all those. Like, I don't need to.
What is your favorite brand to sell?
I know what you like to sell. Okay, go ahead.
I know what you like to sell. I'm going to take a guess here, because I know that like 85% of resellers cannot sell this toy brand. I'm going to go with LOL.
Yes, sir. Yes.
LOL OMG. Man, I from the start of my reselling, I could never sell that brand, and I wish I could have. And then when you had met and you had showed me that you can sell this, I was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? I must have just missed that transition when it was red restricted, which means not even an invoice will work to get out of this one. So that has to be your favorite toy brand to sell.
It is, yes. That's I love that brand too, because it's like, when Target and Walmart clearance stuff out, like if a Lego reseller goes in and they wipe everything, like I can still go in and get LOL a lot of times.
Because nobody else can buy it. Nobody else can sell it.
I can still do really good on LOL clearance, and it tanks way less than everything else.
Of course, of course. So because now every day, listen, but when I first started reselling, the top brand was Nike. Oh, you're gonna get ungated in Nike. The day I got ungated in Nike, I thought the golden crosses were gonna come out, and I was like, "That's it, Ma, I made it. $1 million, $2 million months. We're gonna go buy every piece of Nike there is." But it really wasn't even that big of a deal. It was cool because not a lot of people could sell it, but it was like a lot of the listings wouldn't show up. Like when I would be in TJ Maxx, Marshalls, the Nike outlet, certain sneakers, I'm like, it's okay. But like, it wasn't like life changing. It was just kind of okay, this is cool.
Yep.
Man. So Jameson, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate you being here, coming on the podcast, man. Listen, next time you are in the area in the Florida, we'll have to do like an in-person sit down and dive in
that
deep.
That would be amazing.
We're doing virtual and in person, so we're doing like a mix of both here. So
yes.
Appreciate you coming on, thank man. You. I look forward to seeing you more success. Brother, man, do you want to share? Yeah, man, thank you. Do you want to share your social medias on here where people can find you if they want to follow your journey?
My name, Jameson Philippi. That's my Facebook and my Instagram. I post on Instagram and Facebook every day. I post different than probably a lot of resellers. I don't post bolos or like tips to grow your business. I just kind of share different things and my travels and business and life and things that I'm learning and how I'm growing. And I just, you know, just kind of share the journey, relate to some, not to everybody, but, yeah, man, definitely check me out. And, you know, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. You know, I'm just out here trying to grow and become a better man, better human, and try to grow and get better every single day, man.
Cool, man. Well, look, thanks for being with us. And thanks for showing everybody who's the boss today.
All right, brother. Much love, brother. Love you, man. Thank you.